Just over a week ago, I made a pilgrimage to Lourdes. That is, to the cricket ground in St John's Wood, not the waters in France. And before going into the indoor nets at Lourdes, I stopped and I had a look over the pitch. Lourdes, the headquarters, as it were, of cricket. And as I stood there looking at this pitch, being a bowler, I imagined in my mind some of the great bowlers that I'd seen play on that ground. Lillian Thompson from Australia, Holdings, Garner, Roberts, Marshall, the West Indies fast bowlers, Kapil Dev from India, Richard Hadley from New Zealand, Bob Willis and, yes, even Ian Botham. And they flashed before me, and I almost could see in my mind's eye these guys running into bowl. And inspired by that, I went into the nets and tore in with renewed energy, and I can still feel it today. But those men acted as a kind of inspiration for me. And that's the purpose of these characters here in Hebrews chapter 11. These men and women from the Old Testament, this hall of fame, as it were, it's a source of encouragement to the original Hebrew readers and to us. As we were seeing in our last study in Hebrews with Kim a few weeks ago, the Hebrew readers were wilting a little. Their faith was growing a little tired, a little uncertain. Just look in chapter 10 and verse 36, where the writer says, "You have need of endurance so that you may do the will of God and receive what is promised." They're wilting. They need the encouragement to carry on and to do so by faith. For as Kim said at the end of his sermon, it is faith by which we become Christians and faith by which we remain Christians. And so to encourage those Christians, and also to encourage us all these years later on, the writer sets out the hall of fame, men and women of faith. Now maybe this morning there are some people here who are also wavering a little in their Christian commitments. Perhaps you're going through problems or pains of one sort or another. The pain of unemployment, of the loss of a loved one, the pain of illness, sadness, depression. Perhaps you're uncertain about your future. Perhaps some people are here this morning uncertain about God's love for them. Perhaps in your own heart and mind you bear scars and you feel, well, God cannot forgive me. I'm too bad. Perhaps you have a guilty conscience for some perpetual sin in your own life. Or maybe just as we begin to come out of winter, the whole of the winter and coughs and colds and things have made you depressed. And things seem very, very hard. And the call of God and the Christian standards are too difficult. And you do feel like just packing it in and forgetting about this Christian thing altogether. It is to you, via believers in the very same situation, I think that God wants to speak this morning. To those who are feeling problems, pains, uncertainties, depressions. Those whose faith is wilting and uncertain. The call, as it was to these early Christians, is to endure, and the means of that endurance is faith. First, notice the nature of the faith that the writer is talking about. Now, if you're really fed up, you'll have glanced through these verses and said, well, it's all right for those people, but they were obviously better than I am. My answer to that is rubbish. Look at what the writer means by faith in verse 1. Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. Now, for members of Koyer, as we break down the sentence, you'll see it falls into two neat parts. Let me take the second one first. The conviction of things not seen. Faith is the certainty that there is more to life than the things we see and touch and experience in the physical sense. The unseen things, of whom the supreme, of course, is God. Faith is the conviction that God is there in the world. And then the first part, faith is the assurance of things hoped for. The certainty that not only is God there in the world, but that God is actually working out in the world his promises, even to the very end of time. And I think it's important that we get that understanding of faith right. Faith is being sure of God and of his promises. I think so often when we speak of faith, people think of, in their minds, of something that they have to work up, they have to build up within themselves. A sort of Christian version of a couple of shots of whiskey to give them Dutch courage. That's not faith. Faith is not man-made. It's not even man-worked up. Faith is simply the certainty that God is there and that God is reliable. And at that level, everyone starts the same. All of us. We start at the same point. If you believe in God, if you believe God's promises are true, if you believe God is capable of working out those promises in us and through us, that is faith. And the rest of this chapter can become a tremendous source of inspiration, because this chapter actually, although it names so many people, puts the emphasis back upon God, not upon man. Upon what God can do in man, not what man can do. The nature of their faith was a conviction of God and assurance of God's reliability. Then secondly, notice the expression of their faith. See, the writer's not concerned with an abstract concept, as you might tend to believe perhaps from verse 1. No, he's dealing with a faith that works. They believed in God, and so when God called, they acted. Have a look at verse 7. By faith, Noah, being warned by God concerning events as yet unseen, took heed, he listened to what God was saying, and constructed. He acted. That was faith for Noah. Turn over the page to verse 8. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place which he was to receive as an inheritance. Hearing and action. Faith has to have action. There was a fire in a block of flats, and a woman came out of one of the very top flats onto the ledge, and she was screaming for help, and the fire engine came round the corner, screeched to a halt, and the turntable ladder shot up, and the fireman got to the top of the ladder, only to find that it didn't quite reach, and the woman was just above him. And so he stood there, and he said to the woman, "Now, lady, all you have to do is jump, and I will catch you." And the woman looked down at him and screamed for help. And the fireman said, "Look, all you have to do is jump and I will catch you. Do you believe that?" And the woman said, "Yes," and remained firmly on the ledge. So the fireman ran down, got on the phone, and another man came up with the fireman and he said, "Look, lady, 3 years ago I was in a similar situation. I jumped and this fireman caught me. And here I am today. Won't you jump?" She said, "I believe he can catch me." And stayed firmly to the ledge. A second person was brought and the story was the same. Belief without action is not faith. Action is the means by which our faith is shown to be real and true. Now again, in case you are very depressed this morning, and thinking, well, my faith would leave me standing on the ledge, as it were. Can I just say that true faith can actually make obedience the obvious and even the easier course of action to take. We read earlier about Moses and God's call to Moses to a tremendous task to go down into Egypt and bring out the people of God. And Moses' reply was this: "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the sons of Israel out of Egypt?" God, you've got the wrong man. You've got the wrong man. Not me, God. Who am I? But then he went. He obeyed. Now, why did he obey? Why did Moses do what God asked him? Was it because he was a super saint? Was it because his faith was so strong that he could do anything? The words here do not give me the impression of someone of strong faith. Who am I? Who am I that I should go? Why did he obey? He obeyed by faith because he was convinced of God and convinced of the reliability of God's promises. So that when God said in verse 12, "I will be with you," Moses knew that he could take that as true. He believed that he could take God at his word and that God would be with him. God was real. The promise was reliable. And in a sense, for Moses to have done the opposite and not go would perhaps have taken more strength, more courage than actually to go. Yes, I don't want to underestimate the size of the task that Moses faced. But what moved Moses into the task was not the size of his faith, but the power of the God in whom he believed. His faith was God from beginning to end. And that faith made obedient action both possible and also sensible. While we're talking about leaping, my little daughter Anna likes to be carried downstairs. And so very often as we get to the top of the stairs together, I'll go down two or three stairs, she'll remain there, and then suddenly as I turn around, she'll just fall forward. And I'll catch her, and I'll carry her downstairs. Sometimes I say, come on, fall, and she does it. I call, she obeys. That's an act of faith. But not great faith, because all the benefits are hers. She gets a carry downstairs. It makes eminent sense to obey what I say, to put faith into action, because the benefits are hers. Faith's expression is obedient action. But we shouldn't always think that the things God asks us to do are either hard or impossible. They're not. Very often the call of God to us is what is eminently sensible and for our best interest. That's the expression of faith in obedient action. But then thirdly, we want to notice the results of their faith. Now in this chapter there are any number of results that one could pick up on. But let me just highlight very briefly two. The first is that they received God's approval. Verse 2. For by it, that is by faith, the men of old received divine approval. Verse 4. By faith Abel offered to God a more acceptable sacrifice than Cain, through which he received approval as righteous. Verse 5. By faith Enoch was taken up so that he would not see death. He was not found because God had taken him. Now before he was taken, he was attested as having pleased God. And then verse 6. Without faith, it is impossible to please him. Faith brings God's approval. And who doesn't want to receive the approval of God? But it's faith that has actions with it, not simply a statement of belief, but the faith whereby we put ourselves totally into the hands of God. That's the first result. They receive God's approval. The second is that their faith produced in them endurance. And this is, of course, why the writer presents all these characteristics. The common denominator of all these people is faith. But notice how often endurance is involved. If you read between the lines, Noah built an ark. Now that didn't happen in a day. It must have taken a long time for that ark to have been built. Abraham obeyed and was called out to a place. It was no easy, short journey. The length of time waiting for the child to be born was quite a long period. Moses wandered with the people in the wilderness for 40 years. And then if you look at verses 35 and onwards, some were tortured, refusing to accept release that they might rise to a better life. Others suffered mocking and scourging and even chains and imprisonment. They were stoned and sawn in two. They were killed with a sword. They went about in skins of sheep and goats, destitute, afflicted, ill-treated, of whom the world was not worthy, wandering over deserts and mountains and in dens and caves of the earth. One of the results of faith is endurance. And I want just to point out two aspects of the way that faith brings endurance. First of all, by being joined to God through their faith, and by the power of God's Spirit at work in them, slowly in these people would produce the characteristics of God. In other words, in them was produced steadfastness and reliability as they became people like God, and they were able to hold fast. That's one way in which faith produced endurance. The second, and in a sense the one that comes strongest through this passage, is that their faith was pointing them forwards. It was always pointing them forwards through the temporary nature of the physical life into the certainty and permanence of the life to come. So in verse 10, we read of Abraham. He looked forward to the city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. And then in verse 16, but as it is, they desire a better country, that is a heavenly one. Therefore God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. Because their faith pointed them forwards to the promises of God, which they believed were true and reliable, they were able to see the afflictions and the problems that came to them in life as temporary. What Paul might describe as not worth being compared with the glory that shall be revealed in us. Problems and pains, yes. Very real problems and pains, as we've already read from verse 35 onwards. But small and relatively insignificant in the light of that greater glory which they shall inherit for each believer. I've just recently been having some work done on my teeth, and being a devout coward, I actually hate even the thought of going to the dentist, let alone spending 45 minutes in the chair. I hate it. I dread it. The pain of the injection, the mouth being pulled and yanked and being half choked with all the bits that they put in my mouth. And while I'm there, I can hear noises outside, people going about their business, people laughing, while I'm undergoing this tremendous pain. And I think to myself, it cannot go on much longer. And even if afterwards my mouth is sore and numb for a while, I'm sure that it's going to go on, and I can think and dream of those cream cakes that I'm going to eat as soon as I can. Momentary pain endured through the hope of things to come. And in a sense, that's a very humorous illustration of what the writer is saying here. That these people went through pain and difficulties, yes, but to them the certainty of things not seen, the assurance of things hoped for, pointed them through those very real pains. The very harsh reality of the world in which they were living pointed them through to the permanent city, the lasting treasures, the true reality, which is God and life with him. I don't want at all to belittle pains that people here in All Souls may be experiencing this morning. I don't want to consider them trite or unreal, and faith doesn't consider them trite or unreal. Some people bear very real pains, even from the beginning to the end of their lives. But I do want us to see that faith can bring endurance by pointing us through those temporary pains, even if they're with us the whole of our lives, to the reality of God and the fulfillment of his promises at the end of time. And we have to, again, as we look at this passage in the Old Testament, remember that for many of these people, in fact for all of them that the writer is talking about, the fullness of God's promise in Jesus Christ had not come. They had not experienced Jesus Christ and the truth of Christ. So in verse 39 he writes this, All these, though well attested by their faith, did not receive what was promised, since God had foreseen something better for us. And all the way through Hebrews, that theme of something better in Jesus Christ. You and I have a surer and firmer foundation for our faith, even as we've sung this morning, in Jesus Christ. And yet these people from the Old Testament, their faith stands an example to us. What's the application of this passage? The application to the original readers and to ourselves is the same. Endurance, running the race that is set before us, with that same kind of perseverance that comes by faith, we're to carry on. Carry on as the people of God on the basis of two aspects of surety. First of all, sure of God's acceptance. All are accepted by faith. When we believe in God, when we put our trust in Him, we know God's acceptance. We needn't walk around bowed and weakened by uncertainty. Does God love me? Does God accept me? By faith we know that God accepts us. And then secondly, we can be sure of God's faith in difficult, of God's strength in difficult times. We needn't wilt when problems and pain comes, even if they are very severe problems and very real pains. The writer would point us to our faith in God and knowing that we can find stability and strength and endurance through that. I hadn't been going to school very long when one day I arrived at school in the company of my elder brothers and I didn't want to go in. I was afraid. I didn't want to go into school, so I clung onto a lamppost outside the school. And there was no way my brothers could get me into school. And then after a little while, my mum appeared as if by magic. I never know how she arrived. But she took hold of my hand and said, "Come on, it's going to be all right." And she led me into the school and she sat with me in the class for a little while and held my hand. And it was all right. It was all right after that because Mum had been there with me in that situation. And that is the steadfastness of faith. In a sense, holding the hand of God who goes with us into the situation and drawing our strength not from me, but from the very real strength of God in whom we believe. Sure in God's acceptance, sure in God's strength. The call in Hebrews from chapter 10 right through into chapter 12 is to persevere. And the people of God can persevere despite everything arrayed against them by faith. I actually sense there are many Christians today who actually need to hear that message. Perhaps there are some here. That we can continue as the people of God by our faith in God. Not something we whip up inside ourselves, not something we struggle to hold on to, but simply a faith which believes in God, which puts our hand, the hand of our lives, in God's hands, and experiences and knows the strength of God going into every situation with us and being there. And you see, what that does is to take the emphasis off me and what I can do, and put it back onto God and what God can do. It's not what I can do that matters. It's what God can do in me and through me. In faith, we actually acknowledge our fragility, our weakness, our imperfection. And we receive the power of God to come through the life and all its problems and to enter the fullness of the promise of glory which God has given to all his people. Let us pray. Father, you know us very well. You do know just how fragile we are, how close we are to breaking at many points in our Christian lives. Father, help us to hold you, and in holding you, know that in effect we are being upheld, uplifted, and strengthened by you as you carry us into and through all the difficulties, all the pains that may face us. Father, may we be willing to put the faith that is in us into practice as you call. And this we ask for Jesus Christ's sake. Amen.